Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today on the show, you're going to hear a speech given by Dr. Kevin Danaher on September 11th, 2011, at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco, put on by the Northern California 9/11 Truth Group. Dr. Kevin Danaher has written several books, like Building the Green Economy, Success Stories from the Grassroots, Insurrections, Citizens' Challenge to Corporate Power, Corporations Are Gonna Get Your Mama, to name just a few. He's also a co-founder of the great organization Global Exchange. And he's the producer of the Green Festivals. And in 1999, he and his wife took over the World Trade Organization stage in Seattle. And as a leading figure on the left, he gets the lies of 9/11 and has the courage to talk about it publicly. So here he is, Dr. Kevin Danaher.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be in front of people who have enough courage to challenge the accepted wisdom. On September 11th, I was supposed to speak at a college in Colorado, and I went to San Francisco airport early in the morning, and the police were turning cars away at the airport entrance. And I was like, whoa, that never happens. And I remember coming home and watching the news, and I was a firefighter fighting forest fires in the summer to get through graduate school to get my PhD. And I remember noticing it was black smoke fire. Black smoke fire is a cold fire. It's an oxygen-starved fire. And when I saw those buildings go down, I immediately thought, no, I'm sorry. You know, kerosene, which is jet fuel, does not melt steel. It never has, never will. So what we can learn, the official conspiracy theory, you know, when people say conspiracy, oh, you're conspiracy. No, the conspiracy theory is that a bunch of amateur Arab terrorists got physics to be in abeyance and hijacked four planes. And think about this. You wouldn't fly them into the building early in the morning. You'd wait till executives were there. You wouldn't fly them into an office building. You'd fly them into a nuclear power plant. You wouldn't fly them into the side of the Pentagon that was depopulated, the opposite side from Rumsfeld's office, et cetera, et cetera. Science is on our side. I was lucky enough to have a PhD advisor who he would force me to summarize my 676-page dissertation on U.S. policy towards South Africa to fewer and fewer words, and he got me down to a two-word sentence. It was about U.S. government policy, and the sentence was, they lie, right? They were always saying, we abhor apartheid, but... And I remember during the Reagan administration spending a lot of time in southern Africa, and nine neighboring countries were attacked by the South African military. Refugee camps were bombed, women and children bombed. The South African government killed people in Paris and London. And when the condemnation would come from the UN, the Reagan administration would veto it, right? So, you know, if our government was willing to lie about all these other things, like killing 2 million Vietnamese, like I was 18 when they tried to send me to Vietnam, and I knew that they didn't have an army or an air force, so there was no possible threat to us, which is why I didn't go. So why? Collapse of communism in the Soviet Union, that there's your causal factor. As soon as communism is gone, what's the excuse for having a big military-industrial complex, right? Because that's what we were all raised on. I don't know about you older folks in the crowd, but we used to do duck and cover drills where atomic bomb attack by the Soviets, and we'd go out in the hallway and put jackets over our heads like that's going to protect you from an atom bomb, right? It was a terror exercise. It was to scare the crap out of us so we would believe the official line that communism was somehow a threat. So the problem is we have at least some aspects of a democracy. We have a lot of physical evidence. So it's absolutely essential for the imperial elite to keep people scared, because when you're scared, you're stupid. So when the U.S. military, friends of mine on the left, they say, boy, the U.S. military is so stupid because when you shoot those drone missiles and you kill those guys, the next day there's like 200 mujahideen with guns in the air saying death to America. That's the goal. That's the objective. Poke the junkyard dog with a stick. He starts to bark and you say, hey, pay me. I'll protect you from that barking dog. Right? They had to create another credible threat that could be global, that could be believable, that would have a racist element to it, play into all the worst fears of our people. Government's first task after 9/11 was to imprint War on Terror. I actually, the only article I've ever gotten published in the Washington Post was the week after 9/11, and I framed it as war or justice. Why treat it as war instead of a crime? If it's a crime, you treat it with police action, and that's actually what's been effective against terrorism. Not guns and bombs and tanks and missiles, right? Because think, you're killing a mosquito with a $5 million missile instead of drying up the swamp of resentment and hatred that's producing the mosquitoes in the first place. So this war framing elevates so-called terrorists to super war status. I mean, it's stupid on the face of it, right? The only reason you would do it is if it was a fake threat and you wanted to scare the American people into believing they need to keep funding a huge military-industrial apparatus. So millions of Americans watch CSI Miami, CSI New York, crime scene investigation. What happens at a crime scene? Yellow police tape goes up around the area and nobody touches a damn thing. It's my husband's wallet. Lady, it's a crime scene. Don't touch it. In both New York and Washington, D.C. on 9/11, the evidence is not only taken away, it is destroyed. The only reason you would do that, break standard operating procedure, is if you had something to hide. Commanders in the military-industrial complex needed to derail talk of peace dividend, right? Remember when that was happening? Oh, Soviet Union collapse, peace dividend. You know, it's like people who say they're disillusioned with Barack Obama. I always say, well, you have to be illusioned before you can become disillusioned. So let's not be illusioned. Let's not expect people in limousines with security guards to solve our problems. They don't know our problems. They don't ride the Mission Street bus like I do, right? So there's no way they're going to fix our problems. It has to come from us, the solution. The Bush administration had its worst legitimacy crisis, remember? Kenny Boy, right? Ken Lay from Enron was Bush's biggest financial supporter. That all got wiped away. And with the destruction of Building 7, the Securities and Exchange Commission offices, with all the Enron files and a lot of other corporate crime files, oh, gee, it all disappears. And now it comes out more recently after this financial collapse of 2008, the Securities and Exchange Commission was destroying files from a lot of these big bank crimes. Interesting. The building owner, as you know, put down $30 million and walked away with, what, $4, $5, $6 billion, you know. Who had the means, right? What government has overthrown more governments in the world than any other? We're the champs at this, you know that thing, we're number one. We're actually number 37 in terms of healthcare systems, but we are number one in overthrowing other governments. And, you know, my main area of research over the decades has been U.S. foreign policy. And there's a long history. It goes back prior to the Bolshevik Revolution. We were sending troops into other countries to get their resources, keep the labor cheap. That's capital's term. For the workers who work for a dollar a day, it's not cheap. It's very expensive. You know, who had access to Building 7? Look at the tenants of Building 7. When you tell people a simple fact of who were the tenant organizations in Building 7, and that Rudolph Giuliani had this special disaster control center that he wasn't in, and in an ABC TV interview, they asked him, why weren't you in that building? Oh, we were told it was going to collapse, he was told. Later on the campaign trail, when he was running for president, people sandbagged him with video cameras, and they said, who told you that it was going to collapse? And he said, oh, I never said that. It's on videotape. You know, it's like, these people lie even knowing that the lies can be disproven. It's amazing. Cost of the war, $3.3 trillion, more than one-fifth of the national debt. Everybody's like, oh, the national debt, the debt ceiling. All right, you want to deal with the fiscal crisis of the U.S. government? It's the military-industrial complex that's the problem. Healthcare and disability costs of veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan is going to amount to almost $600 billion over the next 40 years. Right? We work with doctors in Iraq, and there is an epidemic of babies born with no eyeballs in their sockets in Iraq from the depleted uranium that's been powdered all over that country. What percentage of the American people know about the epidemic of babies born in Iraq with no eyeballs in their sockets? That's the part that bothers me the most, the stupidifying of my own people. And I love this country. That's why I get upset about this. I used to live in Washington, D.C., and I swear to God, I would get tears in my eyes when the plane would start coming in over the Jefferson Memorial, where if you go out to the Jefferson Memorial late at night and you read the inscriptions chiseled into the marble, up inside the rotunda, he says, I pledge undying hostility. Oh, no, he says, on the altar of God, I pledge undying hostility to any government restriction on the free minds of the people. Telling a lie of this proportion is worse than any kind of repression, because what you've done is you've put a mistruth deep into people's minds and their hearts. And then people like us have to talk with them and say, no, please, look at the evidence, you know. The opportunity cost, all this money could have been put into healthcare and education and all these other systems that are falling apart in this country, which you've probably noticed. So as was mentioned in the film, we're having national post-traumatic stress disorder, right? Look at the waste. It just came out a report from the U.S. government that between $30 billion and $60 billion of the money we spent during the Iraq War was on projects that either didn't get built or they got built wrong and are not being used, wasted. $30 to $60 billion. You know what we could do with that money? Give it to the left and see what we can do to change this country. Wasted lives. Think about how many young, patriotic individuals signed up to the U.S. military because of 9-1-1, right? It was the same crap that friends of mine went to Vietnam. We got to get those communists. I was like, dude, you don't even know what communism is. I had a buddy that was a door gunner on a helicopter. He got shot down. He took a round sideways. It ripped his stomach open. He was holding his intestines in his own hand, and he said it was at that moment that the thought ran through his head, I don't even know what communism is. He didn't die, luckily. He spent 5 years in a POW camp. Very, very interesting guy to talk to about how prisoners were treated if you behaved yourself and didn't try to escape. What percentage of Americans know how many people were killed after 9-1-1 because of the way they looked? 7 human beings were murdered by other Americans because of the way they looked. There was a Sikh because he had a turban, they killed him. There was a woman in Oklahoma who these 2 rednecks were beating on her, saying, go home. She was a Native American. I mean, that's approaching insanity, right? So out of this, we get this whole clash of civilizations, us against them. And this ideology, the imperialist ideology, requires of them, you have to have some inferior group that you're making it okay to repress and control their movements and drop bombs on their mosques, etc. Now, just imagine the impact on the struggle against racism in this country if we could establish and prove that, in fact, it was not fanatical Muslims who did 9/11. It was people in seats of power within our own system. We're 5% of the world's people consuming 25% of the world's resources and putting out about 25% of the world's pollution. We are the empire at the end of the age of empires. In a world of internet and transparency, and everybody having video on their cell phones, you see what's going on in the Middle East, right? The Arab Spring, these uprisings. I've done a lot of work in the Middle East. If somebody had predicted that Mubarak family would be in jail, I would have said, oh yeah, right, what are you smoking? The USA, we have 865 military bases. You know, this doesn't count the secret ones. It doesn't count Iraq and Afghanistan. If we could convert those bases into eco-development platforms, green economy centers, innovation zones, doing organic agriculture, we'd actually, there you get at dry up the swamp of hatred and resentment. And I would like to see Global Exchange this year, we'll do about 45 trips, group trips to Cuba. I was just down there in July with a group of 40 green MBA students. And the idea crossed my head, ooh, we could do a conference in Guantanamo, the city of Guantanamo, and bring together all these development, architecture, engineering experts about how we're going to convert Guantanamo Naval Base from being a torture center into being an eco-development platform, an eco-university. Wouldn't that be nice? And a lot of people around the world would support that. The right wing in the U.S. has had a subtext to all of their tactical struggles, whether it's immigration, whatever. The subtext was government is bad. So what the left in the U.S. needs to do is have a subtext to all of our struggles. Government is us. Government is us, okay? It's not good or bad. If it's bad, it's our fault, and it's our responsibility to fix it. We can't think that voting once in a while for some old, rich, white, male corporate lawyers, because that's basically who runs our country. You know, it's like if you said lesbian carpenters should run the country, people would say, no offense against lesbian carpenters, but they're a small percentage of the population. Old, rich, white, male corporate lawyers are a very small percentage of the population, but they run our country. So think, the United States was the first country to establish the principle that government is a derivative institution. It is secondary. It derives its authority from we the people. And that's why our most precious document, the Constitution, starts with those words, we the people. That's a radical concept. And that concept is out there in the streets around the world. We work in about 30 different countries at Global Exchange. People love that part of the United States. They hate our corporations. They hate our government policy. But the basic principles, the Bill of Rights, the right of free speech, the right to assemble, the right to address government for grievances and not be killed, right, not be shot dead, those things are still honored around the world. So there's a solutionary movement out there. I like solutionary. You know, it's more positive than revolutionary. It doesn't necessarily involve blowing up banks or anything like that. And I want to remind people, you know, when you're talking to Christians, remind them that Jesus got violent one time and one time only. He didn't pick kings or tax collectors. He picked bankers because they were defiling God's temple. Who runs the world? Bankers. Are they defiling God's house, the planet? You bet they are. So we're less violent than Jesus, right? We're not saying throw their stuff on the ground. We're saying change these institutions. You have all of these different movements, and they're starting to come together now. And that's what's freaking out the people who are running the empire, because they have to at least kowtow and say the word democracy once in a while. And that's our tool, is being able to mobilize people and put people out in the street. So what we need mostly is courage. I have really good friends who are solid leftists who I've gotten arrested with at World Bank IMF protests. And when I raise this issue, they say, oh, Kevin, don't even go there. They just refuse. They do this, you know. Okay, well, that's sad. That's sad. And we need to reach out to them, because we've all faced moments of lack of courage. We all know what it's like. You know, the big guy on the street who threatens you and you realize he'll kick my ass and you run away because you're smart. We've all had those moments. And that's what people are experiencing now. And we need to be generous of spirit and reach out to those people and not fire hose them. Don't you know the facts of 911? Do. Because that just freaks people out and drives them away and makes them think we're nutty, which some of us are. I confess to being nutty. You know, we need to get up on our hind legs, you know, and get mobilized and get out in the street. Cynicism, which you hear a lot, cynicism is what passes for insight when courage is lacking. Cynicism comes from a Greek root, kynikos, K-Y-N-I-K-O-S. It means like a dog. No offense to dogs, but, you know, this is the first ever global revolution. Every revolution up until now was a national revolution where the revolutionaries sought to gain control in the capital city. When the Zapatistas rose up in southern Mexico in 1994, they did not say, we want to get Mexico City and control Mexico. They rose up against a particular corporate economic model that was destroying their forests and starving their children. And they said, we'd rather die on our feet than live on our knees. The Mexican military at that time had the physical ability to destroy the Zapatistas. And the reason they couldn't was all around the world, people rose up in solidarity with the Zapatistas. We emptied our office and went right down and occupied the Mexican consulate on Market Street. And we sat down and said, you want your office back? You get on the phone and you call your people in Mexico City. And you tell them right now they better pull those people off. And a couple days later, some other people went in that office and threw their furniture out the window and smashed their computers. That wasn't me. But I might know who did it. So we're going through a paradigm shift. Guns and money versus facts and moral authority. So we have science and spirituality on our side. They have guns and money. Guns and money are temporal. They dry up and blow away in the wind. They're not everlasting. Facts and moral authority, our main tools, are much stronger than guns and money. Dr. King said what will win in the end is unarmed truth and unconditional love. That's the power we have in this movement. The challenge is not a burden, it's an opportunity. History has given us an opportunity to change the course of history by just speaking the truth. That's all. And as somebody in the film said, ask them questions, right? take a steel girder and put it in a swimming pool full of kerosene and let it burn for days. It's not going to melt, okay? That just doesn't happen. So we need a really long-term view on this. We're all, I'm one of these get it done yesterday kind of people too. You know, I'm very impatient. But we have to realize the cathedral builders in Europe and those cathedrals that took 400 years to build, the people who did the foundation layer, they knew that they would not see the final product of their work. But they knew they had to do very solid, precise work because of all the weight that was going to come on top of their work. That's our role. We are the foundation layers of a different world. And when you lay a foundation, it has to be very solid and very precise. So we don't need to exaggerate. We got tons of facts on our side. I did a lot of work in the anti-apartheid movement. People would exaggerate the crimes of apartheid. I would say, don't exaggerate. You don't need to. It's a horrific system. And if you exaggerate, that just can catch you up in dishonesty later. And people say, oh, you were wrong about that fact. You must be wrong about other things. Right? We don't need to exaggerate. We got tons of evidence, and it's been collected. And this, the new film stock from Architects and Engineers, I blast it out, and you know, people write back to me and go, my God, I didn't realize. A lot of people just haven't thought enough about it. So we've already won. Think. If there was global voting, and that's coming, the internet, you know, we're going to have global voting. If we had a global vote on things like, should we take all the military spending and put it into healthcare and education? We would win that vote. We would win that vote, right? Should we save the environment or continue destroying it? Should women have equal opportunity with men? Yeah, there'd be some idiot men who would vote against that. But the majority would vote the way we would vote. So we've already won. But we are suffering from the cult of powerlessness. Oh, God, the system, man. It's just the man. The man's in your head, okay? The man's in all our heads, and we got to pull those out and throw them away and be empowered to be the citizens of this country, changing the course of this country, because we are the empire. And if we can bring the empire down with a soft landing, there'll be millions of people around the world that will thank us for it. The prime directive is from William McDonough. How do we love all the children of all species for all time? Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And next is the Q&A that followed his speech. And here, Kevin Danaher is responding to a question about how to get the word out about 9/11.
If you didn't hear what the gentleman said, have a house party. Invite some people over to your home, your neighbors. We should all know our neighbors. And say, let's just watch this and then have a discussion. If people still want to deny it afterwards, okay, but at least you made the effort. You try.
The next question was about Iraq being the prime motive for doing 9/11. The invasion would have been impossible without 9/11. And here's Kevin Danaher's response.
I totally agree. My number one of, you know, the military-industrial complex, that includes Iraq and Afghanistan. What people don't realize about Iraq, I happen to have been in Iraq with one of our group reality tours before the first invasion, Daddy Bush. And it was very interesting because the government and Saddam were saying, oh, we're not going to be invaded. Kuwait's part of Iraq anyway. You know, we didn't do anything wrong. But I was having trouble getting my 15 people on seats on planes out of Iraq because all the Iraqi elite were out at the airport putting their wives and children on the planes to get them out. So it's interesting. Governments lie to their people. Yeah, they all do, including ours. And ours, unfortunately, because it's an empire, has a lot of reason to lie. And that's our responsibility. If my government is lying to my people in the world, it's my responsibility as a citizen to do something about it. I can't just complain during cocktail parties or something. You know, I have to actually go out and do something about it.
And here, Kevin Danaher responds to a question about holding Bush, Cheney, and friends accountable for 9/11.
Yeah, I think there's a higher goal than getting these people in jail. I mean, I'd love to see that. I'd be there, you know, applauding as they were perp walked with the handcuffs. But I think there's deeper issues here, and that is the empire. We've got military units in about 100 countries doing kind of Navy SEAL, secret operations, stuff like that, all sorts of nasty stuff that the public doesn't know about. And that all has to be deconstructed. That's a massive undertaking. So, yes, individuals should go to jail, but there are these structural problems. It's our corporations and our banks, which are the dominant economic actors, still, with all the hype about China. China's going to hit an environmental wall, by the way, if anybody's been there recently. So what we have to look at is, yes, there's the instrumental issue of getting the criminals in jail. And I think, you know, we know who they'd be, Cheney, Bush, those kind of people would be up near the top. But there's a structural issue, too, of the role of our corporations, of the very way our economy functions. The fact that a redwood tree standing has no value. It's only when you kill it and turn it into, you know, hot tubs. A fish swimming alive in the ocean has no value. It's only when you kill the fish under this capitalist system we have. That has to change. So what's going on in the world right now is a shift from a system where money values ruled over the life cycle to one where life values will rule over the money cycle. And that's a massive historic shift. The gap between what is and what could be has never been this great in human history. And when people realize that and they go from woe is me, we're screwed, to wow, we may be able to save humanity from itself, the spiritual energy, the political energy that's released when people have that realization, we see it happen at the Green Festivals. People's minds get blown. They realize, oh, there's another way to do this. We don't have to destroy nature to produce the goods and services we need to survive. So this is a massive historic transition we're going through, which is kind of why it's like, whoa, shaky.
The next question is about how the powers that be are able to cover up events like 9/11.
When these things are done, part of the planning is the propaganda. You notice that a press release went out about Building 7 coming down, that the BBC is reading it, and Building 7 is still standing behind them. You know, there were screw-ups like that. When John F. Kennedy was killed, there was a press release in Australia that couldn't have been, you know, it was about Lee Harvey Oswald, and he hadn't been captured yet, you know. So there are little flaws in their story. But to me, a state that has to repress is not a strong state. It's a weak state. A strong state, the leaders would come out and say, hey, we're going to invade Iraq because it's got not only a lot of oil, but it's got the best water resources in the Middle East, right? Something people forget. And then everybody would say, oh, yeah, great, let's invade them. If you have to kill 3,000 people to maintain your imperial military-industrial complex, you're illegitimate by definition. So again, we have to find strength from the fact that we're right. We're on the side of truth. And we're not going to go away. We're not going to go away.
And again, you were just listening to Dr. Kevin Danaher speak in San Francisco on September 11, 2011, about 9/11. You can see the video of that speech on YouTube by searching for Kevin Danaher and 9/11. His website is called globalexchange.org. And he has trips this year going to Afghanistan, North Korea, Argentina, Uruguay, Ecuador, Cuba, Spain, Iran, Mexico, Costa Rica, and Haiti. And they're really, you know, educational, cultural trips. And the first Green Festival this year, lucky for us, is going to be in New York City from April 16th to the 18th, 2016. And I attended one of those in Washington, D.C. a few years back, and I found it really wonderful. So I'd encourage you to check that out. And an update on the Progressive Movie Night, the movie we had scheduled for February 24th has been rescheduled to March 9th. Stay tuned for more details. And this concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.